As you know, this is an elitist programme. Recently, we've had Nobel Prize winners, the Prime Minister, the President of the Royal Society of London, so it's entirely appropriate that we finish today with the top quark. James Joyce was not thinking of frontier physics, as he wrote Finnegan's Wake, but a Nobel laureate read that strange book and knew immediately that quark it had to be. So in the interests of recruiting the next generation of physicists in Australia and celebrating the 100th anniversary of quantum, here's Jay Howarth from Scotland.
I'm celebrating myself by trying to use this century-old theory, which has been wildly successful and is now finally, after a century, having real-world applications. I'm trying to apply these techniques to new areas where they haven't been used before. And for me, that's high-energy hadron colliders.
High-energy hadron? Do you mean the hadron collider they have now is not high energy?
No, I do mean the hadron collider we have now. So I work on the Large Hadron Collider on the ATLAS experiment at CERN.
You go to Switzerland?
Yes, not so much since COVID, but we try and get out there at least once every 2 months or so. My students are out there permanently.
While I'm being supercilious, is it true that they have a mouse cage there, which are in fact the mice used on computers with those strings attached?
Yes. CERN is an unusual place. I think people expect it to be this beautiful utopia of science. And honestly, it looks like a 1960s Soviet era kind of town. In almost every corridor, though, there are these giant bins full of expired computing equipment, not just mice, but old computers, old floppy disks, old bits of machinery, and they're everywhere. I don't know where it comes from or how they get refilled constantly, but there's a huge amount of tech going back to the 80s and 70s just lying around in bins in the corridors.
Why don't they recycle it?
I think a lot of it is supposed to be recycled. I just don't know where it keeps coming from. It must be stored in cupboards and some people periodically empty them. But
okay, your work. You're in the High Energy Hadron Collider. What's the first experiment that you do and what are you looking for?
So I look at something called spin correlation. So I work on the top quark. This is the heaviest particle that exists in nature. It doesn't exist naturally anymore. We have to produce it at these machines. But it's a really useful thing for playing around with quantum concepts because we can accurately measure its spin. And when we produce them in pairs, we can compare the spin of one to another and learn all kinds of interesting information from this.
Is this where entanglement comes on? Because if there are a pair of them, they'll spin in the same direction even if you separate them.
Yes, that's a really interesting thing about top quarks. When you make them in pairs, sometimes they're entangled and sometimes they're not. So this actually allows us to play a lot of games by trying to select the ones that are entangled and compare them to the ones that aren't, and from this, understand the effects that quantum mechanics can actually have on fundamental particles.
By the way, how do you know that the top quark used to be out there in the wild?
We can't go back in time and check what the Big Bang looked like. It would be very nice if we could. We can only produce it in environments which have extremely high energy. You need a lot of energy to create a top quark. So they have a single top quark has the mass of nearly the mass of a gold nucleus, which I can tell you is very, very heavy as far as these things go. So the last time that sort of energy existed in the universe was just a few milliseconds after the Big Bang.
And when you've produced what you want, how long does it last itself? Nanoseconds?
Much shorter than that. It has a lifetime of 10 to the minus 25 seconds, so that's 0.25 zeros. It's one of the shortest lived particles that exists. In fact, that's one of the most unique properties about it. One of the reasons that we can test it so well is actually because it decays before it has time to interact with anything else.
So your joy is short-lived.
It's very short-lived, but that makes it very special. That's why I'm particularly fond of it.
And you've got a recording that means something to other scientists when you show them.
Yes, we actually have a plethora of top quarks at the LHC now. It used to be they were quite difficult to produce and we only had a few thousand. Now we have millions and millions of these stored on tape that we can use to perform all kinds of different experiments.
Such as?
Well, spin correlation and quantum information is one of the things I do, but these are also a really good place to look for the production of new particles because they're so heavy. If there's some even heavier particle out there, it's likely the top quark would be the first thing they decay to. So we can use top quarks to search for even heavier new particles.
As you're in Scotland, isn't that where the Higgs lives?
That's where Peter Higgs studied and worked, yes. We have a fond...
While he was alive?
While he was alive, yes. I was not going to go that macabre with it. But yes, there's a huge history of particle physics research. And of course, Peter Higgs, who along with some collaborators, Engelbert and Broke, theorized the Higgs boson as a mechanism for giving fundamental particles their mass.
That's what I meant. The mass comes from there, the heaviness thereof. Although it's better to say mass, isn't it, rather than heaviness?
Yeah, I mean, with these kind of things, you're talking about mathematical concepts, so always the language is failing a little bit here. But mass is fine, yeah. It's the amount of mass the fundamental particles have. You can call them heavy. The top quark is heavy, we say that all the time.
When you've got the theory worked out, the top quark's there as faint memories, but recorded, the significance? What do you do next?
The thing you want to do with top quarks, and what, another reason they're very nice, is they have a very clear signature of how they decay. And the ones we like tend to be the ones that decay to what's called a B quark and a W boson, which is another kind of heavy particle. And then, most importantly, that W boson can decay to a charged lepton. And particle physicists love charged leptons. This is what an electron is, for example, or muons that you might have heard of in cosmic rays and things like this. We love those kind of particles because they're very stable and they produce really obvious signals in your experimental apparatus. So we can measure them very accurately and use it to infer things about the parent top quark that they came from.
And all of this is confirming the standard model of physics, and it's making you reassured that you've got the ideas right.
It's confirming it to a frustrating degree. I think a lot of us would be much happier if the standard model were less successful than it is, because although it is a really successful and very nice model, we don't believe it's the fundamental one that governs the entire universe. There are things that it can't explain, but it's been so good at explaining everything we see up until now. It's not reassuring as much as it is a bit frustrating. We'd all really like to find something that it doesn't agree with.
Okay, well, congratulations. I can see how you're celebrating the 100th anniversary of quantum. But we've mentioned a couple of names, Higgs and a couple of ones before that. But what about James Clerk Maxwell? What are you doing with his celebration?
A few years, I think it's 2029, but I'd have to double check. But we are having the anniversary of the birth of James Clerk Maxwell, really famous and important scientist, physicist who worked on electromagnetism. And there will be all kinds of events celebrating his achievements, both scientific and cultural, around the UK and particularly in Scotland.
Uh-huh. And you're preparing for that now?
We're planning for it to be a big thing, so it takes quite a few years to prepare in advance. These big events don't just happen on a whim. So yes, it's something we're preparing quite far in advance.
A final question, just in case people think I've left it out. Does your work in any way have anything to do with quantum computers?
Peripherally, yes. So the really nice thing about quantum 100 years later is that it's having practical applications now. But we still don't understand quantum mechanics perfectly. And if we're going to transition to an economy and a technology base that widely uses quantum information, we better understand it as well as we can and test it under every condition we can possibly test it against. So that's one of the reasons it's nice to try it, look at it at the Hadron Collider, because we can test it under really, really extreme conditions. We're not going to have PCs and mobile phones with quantum chips in sticking in the Hadron Collider, obviously, but it can help elucidate bits of the theory that might not be quite complete.
So you do your experiment in the gigantic international confines of CERN and the Hadron Collider. Your quest for the top quark is successful, and it exists there for you for less than a nanosecond, much less. And then you relish the recorded memory. Oh, the joys of the nuclear zoo. Jay Howarth is a senior lecturer at the University of Glasgow, celebrating 100 years of quantum.